This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We're beginning our latest Project Milwaukee series today, and a few months ago when the planning began, we considered a host of potential subjects. But as sometimes happens in this business, we were missing the forest for the trees. It's hard to imagine how politics in Wisconsin could have been any more turbulent than what was experienced over the past year. From the end of high-speed rail through the state budget process to voter ID and concealed carry, a Supreme Court race that could have been decided by the Supreme Court, and of course, the season of recall elections, the year has barely given any of us time to breathe and reflect. We're going to do that a little over the next week anyway, and we're going to set the table for our Project Milwaukee by talking with some of the people on the front lines of this past year, the journalists. We brought five of them to Lake Effect Studio C1, David Haynes, editorial page editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Mark Cass, editor of the Business Journal of Milwaukee, Steve Jagler, executive editor of Biz Times Milwaukee, Linda Jones, editor of the Milwaukee Courier, and Bruce Murphy, editor of Milwaukee Magazine. Thanks for being here.
Always good to be here.
Sure.
Why did Wisconsin become ground zero for what seems to be this national political debate, both over public versus private sector, but maybe even a broader national debate? Why here?
I think one reason might be, obviously a key reason is that Scott Walker could do it and decided to do it. I think one factor in the background there was that there have been some years of excesses in terms of public employee benefits. And I think there was a certain amount of revulsion over that, and I think that created some groundwork for the change in the law.
I also think part of it was the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, was looking for a governor or two to begin this path of taking away the negotiating rights of public employees. And Governor Walker and Governor Kasich in Ohio raised their hands, and they were willing to step out there and do that in their states.
I think Steve's right. I think it's really started at the national level and got onto us. But then I think Scott Walker was looking really to make a name for himself very early in his administration, really wanted to stand out, has national aspirations at some point. So I think it really started at the national level, but it really – and then ended up here.
One of the complaints that – people who oppose Scott Walker or the Republican legislature have said is that this wasn't part of the debate during the election cycle. Would you contend it was part of the debate, but just you had to be paying attention to it on a national level and hear these rumblings out of state to have expected it to have taken place in Wisconsin?
I think the average voter would have had no idea that this was going to happen. I do think if you look at Walker's record as county executive and how he dealt with the unions that there's no question he played hardball. But I think the first explicit mention, and I think Steve was probably there that day too, is at the press club just about a year ago after Walker's election but before his inauguration. So I don't think there's any question that he was going to be tough on the unions, but the idea of what he would call decertifying the unions, that was new.
I also think it was a matter of – I think everybody kind of expected him to kind of throw it out there and then maybe say, okay, I only want the concessions. But he played hardball throughout, and I think that's what really surprised people.
Linda Jones, you look like you had something to add.
I just wanted to add it. I agree with that point on it being part of a national agenda, and I think he was in the prime position to do it. He had the majority, and he just came out of the gate running with it. And I agree that his aspirations are more on a national scale. And I think the national GOP looked to him to do it, and he was willing and ready to do it. But I don't think he campaigned on that because, as we know now, he received at least 37% union votes. So there's no way that that was understood.
It wasn't even understood by the media, frankly. I mean, did anyone in this room expect he was going to do that? I certainly didn't. I mean, he talked a little bit about cutting benefits for employees, but – even that, frankly, I kind of scoffed at because you'd have to turn over both houses of the legislature to make that happen, and that seemed pretty unlikely.
He never declared that leading up until the press club event after he had been elected. And I don't think anybody would have envisioned that he would roll back 50 years of labor law in this established labor law in this state.
That said, there is an argument to be made that the state's labor costs needed to be controlled in a more constructive way. And it's not just Walker. If you look at states that have Democratic governors, the same sort of dynamic is playing out. But, of course, there hasn't been anything that went as far as Walker, except for Kasich, the Republican in Ohio. But in states like Massachusetts and New York, there are efforts to have better control over labor costs, particularly the legacy benefit costs.
I also think he was trying to ride something here and that he had just been elected. He's at his highest point he's ever going to be throughout his term. I mean, if he's ever going to do it, now's the time. I don't think he ever expected it in terms of being recalled, but he know he has his honeymoon period, and he tried to kind of rush it through in that period.
Except I would say that I've talked to some old Republican hands, people who work for Tommy Thompson and before, who have made the point that it was a ham-handed way to do it.
I didn't say it was the right way to do it. I think he was at the point. I think anybody who's in politics would know you never play your whole hand at once.
Right.
And he did. He said, it's this or nothing.
This is the time that the most political capital to spend.
But he also said, it's 100% or nothing. I mean, the majority of it, all of us in this room have seen it. I want 100%, but I'll really want 60%.
But I'll take 60.
Right, I'll take 60. He never said that. He wanted 100 and he never budged. And I think that's what really surprised people.
Think of how Tommy Thompson might have handled it. Totally. He would have declared victory in January 15th, maybe, and had a whirlwind tour around the state.
Yep.
Do you think is this representative of just how politics is being played today? Is the standard operating procedure around the country 100% or nothing? Are we seeing that play out in other ways?
I think, of course, the GOP is operating that way, and I think that is what's getting to the core of people, that's really getting people to react and the emotions that it's hitting on, because it's that all of nothing, no compromise. We can't – it's a lack of respect for the other side, my way or the highway. And that's why you have an Occupy movement right now. That's why you have these extremes, because the policies are so aggressive and so extreme and so disrespectful.
Chris Murphy, you looked like you had something to
add. Well, you know, David mentioned about Walker's history as a county executive. I mean, this is a guy who repeatedly had his vetoes overridden by the board and really didn't seem to care about that. He was pretty much going to stick to his guns. So he's clearly not much of a compromiser. That said, there's no doubt that this also plays against a background of a country getting much more polarized and much more partisanship on both sides, I think.
Steve Jackler.
The art of compromise in politics, I think, has died. It used to be an admirable thing for a politician to reach across the aisle and build a consensus solution going forward. Now that's perceived as political weakness on both sides.
Even should Governor Walker be recalled, or the recall election moves forward and the governor wins and remains in office, what does Wisconsin's mid and long range look like? What do you expect the state to look like, say, by the end of Governor Walker's elected term?
I think 2012 is going to be – Wisconsin's just going to be a political cesspool of television commercials. You're going to have a commercial 1 minute saying that Scott Walker is the savior. You're going to have the next commercial right after it saying that he's Satan. And it's going to go back and forth, back and forth. The national forces are going to come to bear. And Wisconsin's a purple state, and it's high stakes. And so I think short term, it's going to be very easy for voters to become cynical about the political process, because both sides are playing to win and they're taking no prisoners.
In terms of the economy, what do you expect? What do you expect Wisconsin to look like in 2013, 14?
I think the next year is really for the readers I write for in terms of business community. It is our worst nightmare. I mean, uncertainty in a business is awful. What they want to know is it good? Is it bad? Kind of where is it? Uncertainty for the next year is going to hurt our economy. It's going to hurt business expansion. You know, either side you're on, it's going to just, you know, it's going to be difficult. And I think, I mean, over the next 9 months, you're not going to see a lot of expansions. You're going to see a stagnant economy.
The economy, you can talk a lot about the Wisconsin economy, and Walker's talked a lot about jobs. But, I mean, the reality is jobs and the economy tend to go along with the national economy. It's difficult as a governor to have a huge impact on that.
Was it foolish for him to have pledged 250,000 jobs?
Well, it looks pretty foolish at this point. He's going to have to get some pretty lucky here. I mean, his own department has pretty much projected that they're not going to hit that goal or anywhere near it. But just to finish on this, so I think in terms of the economy, I don't know that we'll be that different than the nation. The question in my mind is, as you have teachers discouraged from being teachers, as you have professors retiring, do you start to lose institutional memory? Do you start to have an impact on the schools? I mean, I don't think we know what the long-term impact of ratcheting down the pay for public employees is and what that impact will be.
I think Bruce is right on point on two issues. One is governors have very little impact over the state's economy. They can, through taxation and tax code is the main impact, but it's mostly following the national trend. And I would also agree that Walker's a transformative governor. I'm not putting a value judgment on that. But it's a transformative time in the state. I don't think we know, and we may not know for several years, what the effects of that transformation have been.
Is the moral of the story to some degree that Wisconsinites like their change incrementally? Would it have been one thing if all of the stuff that the governor rolled out had been rolled out over the course of a four-year term? Do you think he would have had more political capital at this stage? You were shaking your head, Linda Jones.
Oh. probably. I think at least there would have been more time for people to adjust and to work across the aisle. And I think that would have been a better scenario than what we saw.
I agree with that. And I think if he would have said, here's what I want, slowly, he could have been more – I mean, there would have been more kind of everybody trying to help each other, maybe trying to work together on compromise. I think it's worked in the past. I mean, there are some projects in the state. I mean, I'll use the stadium example. Not everybody wanted it, but in the end, everybody got in a room and it got done. I mean, if you really needed these concessions and they got in a room and they got it done, but here it was his way or no way. And, you know, he had the majority, it's true, but I don't think he expected the other things that happened.
I don't think there's any way you could have negotiated Act 10 with the Democrats.
No, I would agree. But you could have done something along the lines of the concessions and this or concessions and that.
It's like we were saying before, though. I think that the political mistake, if there was one, was that he didn't recognize victory when he saw it.
Exactly.
You know, the thing that strikes me is I don't recall any time, you know, the state government ever made this much change this quickly. In fact, I wonder if you went back in the entire history of the state that you could ever find a year comparable to this. It's unbelievable how quickly this change came down. And I mean, normally policy leaders, what you do is first you sell the idea, that takes some time, you know, then you get the legislature board and so on. So the pace at which this change has occurred, and I mean, it's not just collective bargaining, it's across the board. It's incredible how much change we've seen.
Does it make it a practical impossibility as journalists to cover something like this when something like this has never occurred in this time frame? Does it just make it impossible to analyze it accurately without really having any precedent for it? That you haven't done a wonderful job, all of you. But
there is no precedent. There is nothing to compare it to in my mind that I can think of. I don't know if any of you.
I think that's part of the strategy. Honestly, I think that's part of the strategy. Hit them back to back so not only does the public not have enough time to really digest this, other politicians, the media, people who would normally scrutinize it and investigate and research, there's no time.
There's an argument to be made that how can you oppose what I'm doing? It's never been done before.
Well, with a number of these bills, and we saw it just with the mining bill, which was just introduced, the perhaps only public hearing on that will come 6 days later. And one of the senators who I think might have some interest in the bill said in our paper this morning that how can I read this bill and understand it in that short period of time? And that happened with a number of the initiatives that Governor Walker and the Republicans in the legislature pushed through this year. I think it was – you asked a question about the media. I think that was our challenge, is having the time to really understand what was happening before it was already done.
I don't think anybody in the media would have ever said, okay, 11 of these people are going to leave the state and are going to stay away from the state for, what was it, several weeks. I mean, I don't think anybody could have predicted that. So, you know, I mean, how do we analyze, you know, how do we do that? I think it's really changed us, and it's made us have to look harder at things, have to work harder, which is fine. But, I mean, I think that's part of the reaction from the public is I don't think everyone quite understands what's all happened over the past year.
On that move, though, that did allow us more time. And it allowed the public more time to look at what was going on. So as controversial as that was by the Democrats, it did allow for some time.
Well, let me ask you this arguably cynical question to end this whole thing, because given the political situation that the Walker administration is in right now, which is not an enviable position, and many I don't know that there are a lot of people that feel especially comfortable in the legislature at the moment. I mean, obviously there are people with comfortable seats. But let me ask you this. Is there anyone at the end of 2011 who feels better off about things, not necessarily personally, but just sort of better off than a year ago?
No matter where you stand in this whole debate with Governor Walker or against him, I think one of the unfortunate things for Wisconsin is that the state has been divided into an us and them. You look at the people who were occupying the Capitol, the original occupiers, if you will, in Madison. A lot of people looked at those people, some of them as their neighbors. They were the guy down the street, the school teacher, the firefighter, whatever. A lot of people looked at those people as people who were making their livings off of my hard-earned dollars and had better benefits than me. To a lot of people, those people were them. To a lot of other people, those people were us. And I don't know how you bridge that, bridge a typical person, a resident's viewpoint of that. You seem to be almost by definition have to be on one side or the other, and I don't know how you bridge that.
I think that the local governments and local school districts would probably say, you know, a number of them would say we're in better shape because we have more flexibility in terms of what we can pay state our, you know, government employees. That said, I mean, if you look at the impact, just take Milwaukee County for an example. I mean, there was the county pension scandal. The veterans there, I think, were overpaid. But now you've basically got the axe swung against all of them, including the people who weren't veterans, weren't getting those sweet handouts. So I think it's certainly hurt employees, but it's given local governments more flexibility in terms of how much they have to raise taxes and so on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that Walker bounced a budget without raising taxes. The structural deficit is in better shape than it's been in years. And that structural deficit was compounded by both Democratic and Republican governors. So to that extent, that's a plus. How we got there, we would quibble with that. We would have arguments with it, and we should. But as I said earlier, I'm not sure that we know yet how this is going to turn out.
I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I think from a business standpoint, a lot of business execs are happy with a lot of the stuff he did. I mean, he didn't lower taxes, but he didn't raise taxes. He did a lot of things that a lot of them were looking for. I think the longer term impact is to come, though, in terms of not being able to get things through, all the arguments, all the protests, all the fights. That's a longer term impact, and really the uncertainty I talked about earlier.
I think one of the disadvantages is that all of the conversation is about unions and that sort of thing, and no conversation is about people who are not working. So it works fine for people who are employed, but where's the job creation? We still lost close to 10,000 jobs. Illinois picked up 30,000. Those are the kind of things we have to address, and where is the job growth going to come from?
Well, I think we can all agree it was an interesting 12 months. Thanks so much for helping us put some of it in perspective.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Our Project Milwaukee Roundtable was Bruce Murphy, editor of Milwaukee Magazine, Linda Jones, editor of the Milwaukee Courier, Steve Jagler, executive editor of Biz Times Milwaukee, Mark Cass, editor of the Business Journal of Milwaukee, and David Haynes, editorial page editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll take a quick break now, Andy, in just a moment, try to figure out whether a seemingly unprecedented year in Wisconsin actually does have a historical precedent. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.